Okay, I think hopefully we're being recorded. Good evening. We're back. We were away for, we missed 1 week of events, and it just seems like such a terribly long time since the last time we were together.
Yeah, for those who were on the internet with EJ this weekend or visiting here, it was a very long weekend.
So we're back, and we are here again, and in a sense, we're here again in the same chamber. And that's the point that we have to want to start getting a sense of, is marking these chambers that we touch base on. And it's an important task to do. So we're on chapter 12.
Chapter 12, right.
And this is really a very unusual chapter for us. And I want to compare and contrast it to a few things. We've gone through a lot of the books so far: Life in the Labyrinth, Joy of Sacrifice, Practical Work on Self. And a lot of those chapters actually were technical in nature. They described things. And gradually, over the last 11 chapters in this book, Life in the Labyrinth by E.J. Gold, he has been leading us along, talking about the idea of, okay, we're beyond the idea of, can I wake up the machine, not wake up the machine. Now that it's awake, what's called forth in you? Not necessarily is there a task to do, but what's called forth. So now that you're in presence, it's called moving in the labyrinth. So he's been hinting at that, how to do it, what are some of the elements to think about. We've had, you were here the last chapter, 11. We had two parts to that. And now it's like he puts all pretense aside and he says, okay, here's something that happened. And so we are in a different moment with this chapter. And I want the thing that's going to be difficult, I'm going to mention it now, and then I'm going to re-mention it a number of times, is this isn't a writing of fantasy. This is a reporting by somebody who is in that space, in that particular experiment. So attempt to hold that in your mind rather than immediately let your linear brain say, oh, I know what this is like. Mm-hmm. So, Ivan, do you want to get us started then?
Okay, you mean with the summary?
the header there.
Encounter with the Simurgh, a school experiment. In the course of several centuries, it is only rarely that a large group of individuals may be able to openly organize penetrations into macro dimensions and explorations of sectors of the labyrinth ordinarily inaccessible to individuals or smaller groups.
Most of you that are on right now, whether you want to admit it or not, you're experienced operatives. You've experienced different groups, you've been in different lectures, different meditations, you've led the labyrinth walks, you've been in all kinds of experiences. And yet, I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about an invocation like the one that's described in this chapter. So, and this was an event that occurred sometime in 86, 87. And I was at this event. So it's reduced to paper here, but all I can say is I can mirror I can mirror some of the literature out there that it's there are so many elements that aren't even able to be reduced to paper.
Sure.
And I'm not trying to be mysterious. I'm not trying to be secretive. I'm stating that what for me is a fact.
Well, I think, David, you shouldn't. I think that we shouldn't. I'm going to say this. Underestimate, you know, the significance or, let's say, the value of having a tangible experience like this. Because, you see, what I get out of just this summary that I read, it is only rarely, in the course of several centuries, I mean, just reading this chapter, okay, I mean, even not having participated in it, but just even getting this much illumination on an invocational event, it gives you a window, it gives you a, you know, the possibility of understanding a lot of different historical periods and historical events and the work of other groups, let's say, of other invocational groups historically. It just came to my mind reading this just now that Golden Dawn group in London in the 1870s and 80s
right.
and 90s, I read a wonderful kind of somewhat scholarly historical study about this, and that what I got out of the historical study, the person that wrote it was sort of interested in the ceremonial magic and had a certain academic knowledge of it, but not much of an insider's feel for what they were doing invocationally. But what I got out of the narrative was there was clearly some high point, that culmination of years of work that they reached somewhere in the 1880s, and some tremendous event like this, similar to the Simurgh event, happened. And then after that, everything entropically declined and fell completely apart, and they started fighting with each other, and the group blew up. But, it, you know, it's like it becomes a lot easier to understand historically what's gone on in esoteric groups in mystery schools, you know, which you could say, you know, what was this, what was the mystery school at Corinth about, or what were, you know,
right.
what was going on with Socrates and Plato's Academy and so on, you know, and this is a kind of a window, you know, into what invocational, how powerful invocational events are and how rare they are.
Susan, are you on the phone? Okay.
Who's on there with Silver?
Yes, you know, I am here.
Hi, Susan. Greetings.
Hello.
So we're going to kind of be loosey-goosey here how we proceed. So just please interrupt me if there's comments that folks are making, please.
Okay. I surely will.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So now, we talked a lot about the art of invocation, and there are many elements involved. Because we can describe it, sometimes we believe, oh, well, I know now how to do that. That's not the case. So let's just look at this kind of like in a empirical manner, Ivan and everybody.
All right.
What actually occurred? What were the elements that were in the space that made it possible that in the course of several centuries, it is only rarely that a large group of individuals may be able to openly organize penetrations into macro dimensions? Okay, what were the elements that were there as we read through the chapter? The first sentence then says, by coincidence or design, 30 had gathered that night for what was to have been an ordinary meeting. Okay, so 30, of course, is representative. It reminds us, I don't know, it reminds us, of course, of Conference of the Birds, which, of course, in the Conference of the Birds points to the seamwork. And the birds are compelled to do something. But this is different. In a sense, it was just 30 individuals. But was it just 30 individuals?
Well, no. Actually, David, you posted this beautiful capsule about the Simurgh by Borges, by this very metaphysical writer from Argentina. And I thought it was quite wonderful the way Borges captured the school aspect, like the work dimension of that 30 birds legend, because what he said, you know, what David posted there, Borges indicated or suggested that all these birds got together, not 30 birds, but maybe many birds, all the representatives of all the species of birds get together, and they all say they're going to go on this journey to find a Simurgh. But what happens? One decides he can't leave his beautiful rose bushes, and another has to stay near ruins at night, and another one, in other words, there are seductions and habits, distractions that keep so many birds.
Attachments.
But only 30, so it ends up that 30 are not only able to escape those attachments, but they go through the seven valleys of, in a sense, a purifying journey, you know, a whole, allegorical journey, in a sense,
so,
where all this cleansing takes place, and then they arrive to find the Simurgh.
Okay, well, hang on before we get there.
Yeah.
So, it wasn't just 30 arbitrary individuals then. It was 30 individuals, and there's something you said about these birds and this thing you're talking about going through the seven valleys of purification.
The fact is that they're the 30 birds who are the survivors. They're the endurers, the persisters.
So the ones
through this
that,
journey, you know.
Cause, and I remember the evening, and it started out with a group of people, and not only did it start out with a group of people, but some people left.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now we're talking about the art of invocation, and I've mentioned this a number of times, that the space decides, in a sense, who will be there.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Two or three people, it's not important what their names are, had to leave for certain reasons. Right? Had to leave for certain reasons. And other people, other experienced operatives, weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
So these are 30 individuals, and these were experienced people. People that were experienced at what, Ivan? Or anybody online? What were these people experienced at? Pianjo, you're up. So these 30 individuals were there, they're not arbitrary, and yet they're experienced, I'm calling them experienced operatives. What were they experienced at? Here's a hint.
Yeah, well, my kind
well,
of
I think,
here.
I think they I, were experienced at focusing their attention.
Experienced at focusing and going with the flow. I was going to say they're experienced at those skills that EJ has been describing in the previous couple of chapters.
Okay, what do you mean by the
invocational skills?
What do you mean by the term "go with the flow"? I mean, that sounds really 70s.
Well, how about not making any sudden moves?
Okay,
you know,
let's explode "go with the flow" a little bit here in context. I don't mean it in the context of the 70s. I mean it in this specific context of 30 individuals gathered for what was to be an ordinary meeting. They gathered. Go with the flow here means being able to sense, have to stay in attention and presence, but being able to sense the quality of the space. All right? If you don't have a sense of what that means, reflect on it, not with your linear brain so much, but kind of like feel into it. Like right now, can you get a sense of what it feels like to be in this space? It has a certain tonality to it. Correct? We haven't been here.
There's a few comments.
Go ahead, Susan, please.
Well, Pianjo replied and asked if they were experienced in voyaging.
Go ahead.
Well, just as if that was
the answer.
The commonality.
That's what I mean by go with the flow is that they have experience in voyaging, by which I mean it's a certain skill of surrender. Active surrender, where what I call it maximum fluidity and maximum discipline at the same time. You have to know when to shift. And there's only one way to know it, and it's a form of instinctual behavior. But it doesn't come from the animal in this case. We leave the animal at the door. We leave the ego, the giant ego. We just check it in the coat room. All right?
Aura has added holding attention and presence, holding the space.
Okay, so holding the space is another element of called going with the flow. Sometimes your role in an invocational chamber like that is to just hold your attention and presence in that manner. That's not simple. And the reason it's not simple is because of another element I'm about to bring up. Okay, so what else was going on in this space? These 30 individuals gathered for seemingly an ordinary meeting. What else happened? So in the chapter, there's a number of paragraphs about this play.
There's a focus of attention. There's the performance that's taking place by the actors.
So sometimes the performance is a model by which we draw that next space down. It in itself isn't the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was talking to somebody about a piece of art the other day. The art itself, in a sense, isn't the thing itself. Isn't the thing the big deal. It's the dance with the viewer that becomes the big deal. The viewer and the piece of art.
Well, did you want to jump through this text?
Go ahead. Right. If there's something you want to read.
Well, this is on the... this is pretty far into it, Mr. Rosa.
Yeah, don't go...
Do you want the last comments before you move on?
Yeah,
go
please.
Ahead.
Okay, because Hawk Lady said that it's an evolving space that we are in at the moment. Almost like it hasn't taken its full shape yet.
Okay, so let's explore that. So we come into the space where we have some sense of the I don't want to use the word behavior, but the
etiquette.
Etiquette, thank you.
Yeah.
The etiquette of the space. We have a sense of the etiquette of the space, and it's beginning. This play is starting to go. We're surrendering into it, but it's not a passive surrender. It's a powerfully active, willful surrender. I would use the word acquiescence. So we acquiesce to it, and so something's starting to build here. All right. So the individuals are gathered. The performer starts to do something, and it's like the music has started. The drums have started, and it's starting to grow and starting to build. Now, another element that occurred, because I have to point to this as a very unique situation, then EJ comes into the room. Now, why does that matter? Tell me why that matters. You have these 30 individuals or so gathered. They have a sense of the space, have an etiquette of it. They understand that. The play is starting, so everybody's starting this fluidic dance of presence. And EJ comes into the space. Anybody? Guess. Not you.
So we have provide energetic jumping off point.
From who?
Jim H.
Thank you, Jim.
Pianjo adds EJ to the channel that disparate energies and focus them like a lens.
Okay. Say the first part again.
EJ to channel the disparate energies.
To the
channel.
Energy.
Thank you. Okay. So that at that time, the group and the actors are helping the group get to this new level of energy. In a certain way, when the group is at that level of energy, that's the beginning point. Mm-hmm. And so, what did Jim say again?
He said to provide energetic jumping off point.
Okay, to provide energetic jumping off point. Nobody in that space had the quality or intensity of energy that EJ had. He came forth at that time because it was possible for him to reveal his that level of energy at that space for the individuals there.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that for a moment. Consider that interplay. So the individuals brought, in a certain way, brought the beginning point to it.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were able to do that, he was able to come to another level. He came in at this other level to begin the process.
Well, this is acting as a shaman, it seems to me. In these,
there
in
you
the
go.
Terms of this book, this is the role in that community, in the tribe.
Right.
In this circle, he was being the shaman.
So I'm on page 135. It became obvious that this was one of those spaces which encapsulates and isolates itself, for which there can be no outside observers. We knew that this would become another of those incommunicable experiences with which we exhaust ourselves in fruitless attempts to share it, its richness and depth of meaning, succeeding only in reducing it to a thin, meaningless shell. This is, we have to remember when Dante went into Paradiso, the mighty angels, the big archangels, came to him and he says, you don't have the capacity to understand what's going on here. For your sake, we will reduce ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Here, these individuals had raised to that level. And
that's good. That's a good point. That's important.
It's an important point to remember that. So there was a form of knowing that was there only because of all those elements coming together.
Yeah, well, the remarkable thing about this is that this is where, you know, if you've ever been part of, I'm part of a sort of ongoing discussion with somebody very scientific, you know, about subjective and objective experiences, you know, about mystical experiences and what's, you know, as someone who's very, very scientific, who's very exact, who's attached, very attached to measurability, let's say, to experimental results, it's very hard to talk with somebody like that, you know, to talk about the evidence of my experience in events such as this, where my boundaries seem to expand, where my attention changes, where my sense of the room that I'm in changes, where my degree of separateness with the other people, you know, that I'm voyaging with, becomes very diminished. It would become, you know, there's a very strong sensation of that you're united, you know, that you're melding together. It's the pack of green, but it's really in terms of sensing. You know, you're sensing yourself together with this others with the whole group of people.
You sense
as an entity, and this is
oh,
you know, how do you how do you tell somebody who wants scientific evidence that there's a labyrinth experience? You know, well, it's like you have to experience this.
Okay, so one of the elements of it that Ivan is just pointing to is that we the people there started to experience themselves as part.
Yeah, I think this is what happened. This is the, let's say this is an element of this as a school experiment. Which
so,
is to say, like David said, there's a kind of tuning up process.
That's exactly
a few
right.
People have to leave. Things aren't quite harmonious, quite tuned. They talk about, let's do the play, less acting. Let's see, he says the only directions right before this passage of yours are right after. Other than the directives, don't act and gather and place your unbroken attention on the actors, no guidelines are offered. So
no other guidelines externally.
But then there's other, he mentions there's other elements present. There's incense present in the room. You know, there's an atmosphere. There's certain, the play isn't being done in full costume or anything, but there's what is it, there's an artifact there that what do you call it, that corresponds to the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah,
it's
so
like there's a
certain,
sacred object there.
Certain
you know.
Elements were placed in the
yeah.
space that when you started to get into the higher chambers, those elements made sense.
Yeah.
They were there. So the space at that moment then was filled with meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, filled with meaning, not linear knowledge. But it was filled with a sense of meaning. And EJ would come into the space and then he would go back out of the space and come back in. And out and in. Almost like, in a sense, he was pulling a cord in and out and in and out.
Or checking, you know, making adjustments.
He'd go
yeah,
out
like the,
and then he'd come
yeah.
back in and look around with
yeah.
a great intensity.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these individuals were able to remain in the space as it spiraled upward in this case.
I have a comment.
Go ahead.
Well, Passworld says that they sense how to move elegantly through space. They become part of the space.
Yes. Now, this is an important point. This is not 30 individuals doing 30 different things together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very subtle. This is a very important but subtle point. Not 30 individuals like doing a dance number together. Like I see certain groups do precision movements. Everyone's precise together. At the flip side, it's the space itself said, here's the direction to go in. And so the moment of acquiescence was, can I follow that space?
DeAndre says the group holds the common focus, the shared intention.
A shared intention.
The breathing stabilized, a deliberate group inhalation followed by rapid exhalation. Something was being pumped up, expanding, a definite presence of something that hadn't been there before. And now it was there.
Mm-hmm.
So the individuals, in a sense, that this, in this sense, became a group. And I want to make that in big, bold letters. These many individuals with this hint and energetic, as Jim told us, input from E.J. Gold, suddenly the individuals started to become a group.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Look at it from a macro-dimensional point of view. What does it mean that they became a group?
well, EJ's been in this book, he's been using the word morphology quite a bit. It's that you're, you know, again, this is the, when you have these experiences, when any of us, I think, have these experiences of altered awareness, you know, when you change your awareness, when your sensing expands, when you get beyond your skin, this is your morphology. I think in EJ's terminology, you're experiencing a change in morphology. And this is a morphology, what is the 30 birds? This is a morphology where the audience, the people, in this case actually the audience and the actors, the audience and the performance and the whole thing together is merging.
So something, you know,
it's becoming an entity. Or it's,
thank you.
I think that when David, if you read a little further in this passage, it's calling an entity. It's calling a corresponding entity or something like
so
that.
So now we're at a very delicate point.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that is very unusual. This doesn't happen every day, every people.
Yeah.
This is extremely... So the individuals were acquiescing, the surrendering to the thing called, and they became a group. When they were able to do that and still stay in the space, and that's what I wanted to say earlier, is that when the energy got to that level, what was difficult was being able to stay in the space. Because we've talked before about cleansing radiations and the amplitude of the heat was quite something, but you felt a certain obligation.
Right.
At that moment, you started feeling this sense of obligation to stay in the space and hold your position, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't define it.
And nobody left it after this point.
After maybe 45 minutes prior to that, nobody left, and everybody that was in that particular space stayed in full presence with active attention and actively worked to be in this space. So the actors led us in a sense, and then suddenly EJ was able to take us through this remarkable work he was doing back and forth, back and forth. And then when it became evident that virtually everybody, and I can't speak for everybody, but I could notice it, began to sense that they were part of the group. Not that they were an individual experiencing something. They literally were becoming part of a group. They were becoming part of something.
Mm-hmm.
And only when that was all those elements were together that we've talked about, and I don't know if anybody marked them down, but those are specific elements, and they come together. It says, we were aware of each other's deep and growing apprehension, yet there was something that wanted to look at it, at the same time a fear of looking directly at it, perhaps with the knowledge that the trauma would force us to downgrade. So that's, and Hawk Lady, I think, this, it's like you're back and forth between the fear of facing the depth of something like that, because the fear is that you will downgrade into the ego and survival, personal survival, but then you would have stopped fulfilling your personal obligation. And we sensed that personal obligation. The image of feathers, blue and green, feathers connected to something very large.
Let me know when I can interrupt.
A bird, a peacock, breathing. Now you can interrupt.
Mm. Yay.
Please.
Okay. So there's a few, so I'll just read through several of them. So Jim H. says, ego set aside, self merges into self. Half world says 30 merging into one. Aura is saying that they are in sync with each other. They develop a group mind of a newly created being for that space and invocation. And then one more thing that was just what you were talking about. Sometimes you don't belong in that space as much as you want to be there.
And that might be. It's just that's who is in the space. And it's neither good, bad, ugly, whatever. That's just the facts.
Yeah, and probably one of the rarities of that event is, I mean, yeah, the likelihood is if anybody had jumped up and said, oh, I can't stand this or something like, you know, any one person there could have probably broken that whole mood.
Okay. So that's
and that
why
it didn't happen.
That's why the very beginning
yeah.
it says, in the course of several centuries,
yes.
it is only rarely that a large group of individuals.
Yeah, this is like saying even among veterans, like say even among the initiates, you know, even among acolytes or whatever, it's not so easy to produce a run, let's say, that
like
succeeds
this.
Like this. But I just didn't want to pass by what something that somebody said, that they out of them saying that they form one together.
Yeah.
What I notice on this reading, the emphasis that he gives to the breathing, that something, the actor, you know, that the actor up front gets a sense, the first inkling that this entity is descending by the breathing, the a change in breath. And then what's happening is that what I get out of this is this whole circle of people are come to be breathing together. And it's like the breath.
At that point,
the entity is breathing in and out.
At that point,
and David can maybe come.
At that point, I want to make a distinction.
Yeah.
That it wasn't that the group was breathing.
Yeah, there you go.
Together. It literally felt as if something else was there and had descended, and that thing was breathing.
Was breathing. Yeah.
So what does that mean and imply here? And it had a very distinct shape.
I think you could, you might call on Silverdale here to go with the human biological machine formulation. I mean, what is, you know, what are we talking about in terms of the machine and the essential self here? You know, for those individuals.
Well, he always talks, and
yeah.
I don't know if he's still on the phone, but he talks about the third element coming together.
Well, I'm thinking of, you know, what you were just saying is, would you repeat the question?
It seemed as if this something had descended.
Mm-hmm.
What does that imply is what I'm trying to say.
Well, what I was thinking is that in order for that to succeed, for that event to happen at all, like the active has to become passive and the passive has to become active. What's usually dominant is going to become
subservient
to
the dominant.
Just be surrendered. And what's usually completely tacit,
quiet,
what's usually not present, which is the essence, you know, which is the presence. And, you know, the qualities of the essential self have to be taking over. Have to be.
Susan, what else was written? Something.
Yes, there's quite a bit. Where are we? Deandra says, it makes me wonder what entity we, this group, have invoked, because its presence has been obvious to us all for a long time.
And particularly Pianjo, by the way. He's been marking that for us, yes.
Aura is saying that there's a sense of any movement of self not in union with the group entity would create a break.
Yes. Good. These are great comments.
Aura is saying, for me, it's the opposite, more of a belonging, though sometimes the eye of the ego doesn't want to be there, doesn't want to be in the intense radiation.
Doesn't want to be in what?
The intense radiation.
Oh, yeah.
Hawk Lady is saying, I'm talking about something different, but it evolved into something different, which I needed to hear. Not sure if that applies.
Okay. So because of the all of these elements coming together, led by what I call the invocational exactitude and excellence of EJ, the group Gil also, though, was able to go there. At that, what does it mean when something descended?
Exactly.
What does that mean? We don't need to describe, name that which is in this space, Pianjo. I don't have that skill. It's just we know that there is something here that descends when we're able to put in this kind of attention together. So in that space, the very unusual that descended was named the seamwork. Now, so let's pretend for a minute that there is something called the seamwork. Let's just say that that entity, which has been described for 1,000 years in literature,
mm-hmm.
the same elements of it, for some reason, have been explained, described over and over and over again in very interesting literature. It descended. Where does it normally exist then? Where does it normally hang out? Not in this dimension.
Not here.
Not in this
Not
dimension.
Around here.
But what if
yeah.
it needs to take a look-see? What if it needs to look around from time to time?
Mm-hmm.
If it needs to look around, it needs to manifest. How can it possibly do that? Does it just do it at will? Like when it feels like it? Or must there be a group of skilled operatives led by a profound shaman that allows
yeah.
it to create an environment such that those individuals, that group can host,
mm-hmm.
and that's the word I'm looking for, it can host this event. It can host for one moment this macro entity coming to, in a sense, look around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to throw in a couple comments.
Go ahead.
Godfrey says a greater intelligence can emerge through the strength of the collective and takes the opportunity, potentially creating a higher capacity and understanding for those present.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Pianja says something descended means we didn't make it.
Yeah, good.
We called it. They called it. You know,
it was able to manifest in the group that was there.
Yeah.
And that is right. It's not like we were really cool and groovy and had a good time mm-hmm. together. Uh-uh. We were fulfilling a post of obligation. In a sense, all it was is, I will stay in this post with this attention and presence. I will not run away. I will be here. And therefore, that group was able to host something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then Lost Horizon is saying, not of our making.
Nice.
Molly Midway mm-hmm. is saying, we make part of it. The part of it that is here.
Who said that?
Molly Midway.
Oh, Molly. Yeah, very good.
Aura says, descending means we created a space and attracted the attention of a higher being by our collective energy, presence, and attention. We got out of the way, made room in order that this could come through.
I'm gonna read a couple of a little bit more from the book. We were acutely cognizant at this moment of the third line of the Voyager's quatrain, not making any sudden moves. It was like in the presence of a big cat, tiger, a lion, or an ocelot. As prudent voyagers, we took especial care not to inflict primate mechanicality and human psychoreflex into the situation. We already had the instinct for total attention intensity, even though we still lacked knowledge and direct experience. An oversight, a small mistake, who knows what could have happened, but it didn't. The experience was beautiful, elegant, nobody flubbed. Next time it might be different, but this time we listened and watched with fear, and trembling, fear and delight to that chilling rustling, that terrifyingly rippling undulation, overwhelming feeling of majestic presence. Underline that, feeling of majestic presence. So it's rare, like in the Bible, when I think when the angel descends, it's actually, I think it's when God descends on Jacob, he says, loose thy shoes, because this is holy. You stand on holy ground. So it's like, know where you're at. This is holy ground. We stand on holy ground. This is what we mean by majestic presence right now. There's no, in a sense, the part of it that's important is indescribable.
Yeah, no, that's what I was talking about. Just try convincing my scientific friend that you have this experience.
Well, for me, it's not a matter of convincing.
Well, it's like actually he would accept that you had this experience, but he would discount the validity of it for somebody else.
Yeah, well, I don't.
As a reality, you see, like, you know, as a teaching mechanism in this book.
And proceeding ahead, what we see is fragmentary and incoherent, although when viewed from the point of view of the absolute, to whom the totality of chaos is perfect order, it makes easy reading. From, as Spinoza says, to see things through the eyes of God. In the primate world, we attend a play inattentively, unguardedly, blindly, stupidly. We ignore the tingle between the shoulder blades. The sure signal that something is breathing, watching, listening to itself. The key to all of this is in the breath, as you were saying.
Yeah,
the breathing, posture, perfect mimicry.
Yeah, all these in elegant balance will bring us to the chamber of any macro being we may be courting at the moment. So that would be only as a group, as a pack of green.
As a group.
It isn't going to work for an individual.
As Godfrey says, when two or more are gathered in my name, so shall I be there.
And is it Godfrey? This is a new name for me. Godfrey is, this is so important. So when we come together, even if we're only coming together, the two of us are coming together, bring forth the intention of the higher. And if you can not only bring forth that intention of the higher, but actually work at it when you're together. Don't get together to kill time with one another. Get together with the highest and the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then that presence also is there. Therefore, if you are gathered in the name of the Absolute.
The intention is what's important.
You bring the intention, but you hold the attention and intention in that space together.
A wonderful clue about breathing.
Yeah.
You know, I think also there are, you know, in the smaller invocations, two people, three people, five people, seven people, it's a very strong clue that there's, you know, there's a wonderful talk of EJ's that was actually about telemarketing, about being on the phone and not having a person very far distant, but the fact that the phone is joining those two people together, and that there can be a drawing out of the essential self of you know, an essence communication between people on the phone, and that EJ talked extensively about, that talk is called the breath of the essential self, that there's a change that you can feel in a phone conversation when the breathing of both people changes and it starts to get in tandem, and it has to do with, it's the smaller kind of capsule version of this sort of larger macro-dimensional event. It's like two people who are beginning to talk more essence, more essentially than from the machine, that the breathing will alter, because there's a breathing that's more, there's a breathing that's an indication, or that's a manifestation of the active becoming passive and the passive active.
That's one of the things that you'll notice, and as Godfrey is saying, when you come together and that other presence is there, part of our job is to attempt to notice that other presence and then allow ourselves to go with that other presence. At what point do 30 birds become 30? The Seamord. Just a bird inflated with unbreathable atmosphere? What becomes of the human primates during the transubstantiation? Do they reach that chamber, or do they become lost in the rapture? Now that we have been there once, what would allow us to make the journey again? In one chamber, 30 voyagers, in another, unimaginably distant, the Seamord. Duplicability is the figment of the primate man. Of the primate man, mind. We may make the experiment 500 times and only obtain the same result but once. In so doing, we may begin to understand the terrible burden of being the Absolute.
Oh, yeah.
And this is what I wanted to get to, and this is that for a moment, something's relieved. And there's an expression and an ability to manifest. So if we can do that for one moment, have we not aided in that task, aided in the task of bringing some relief to that burden of attempt to spring forth as the Absolute, to show one sliver of light? And then when we do that, those that are around us, there's a little part that gets noticed, that they notice that. Thus we understand what our work can be.
Yeah, I think that ending statement is also the gateway, it's the doorway to what the next chapters are going to be about. The initiation of the Absolute is coming.
Yeah, the next, so just remember where we are now is at the beginning point of the next chapters.
Mm-hmm.
The next chapters are quite something, there's some real strong comments on wingsofchaos.com on both chapter 10 and 11. And I've been gone for a couple of days, but I'll look at 11 to see if there's any pending comments there. That's wingsofchaos.com, chapter 11 of Life, 12 of Life in the Labyrinth. And I posted some of the definitions that you'll see about what is the Seamord. It's a huge topic. We could spend a month just on the Conference of the Birds. It's a remarkable piece.
I think it's absolutely wonderful, the continuity, you know, that EJ is invoking here. It's like this is an experience that David and a number of other people shared. Kelly and Robert were the actors in this event. And, this is a continuity. It's a link with whatever these traditions are, the Persian Sufi tradition,
mm-hmm.
and this Armenian tradition that he refers to with the grunk and so on. It's like a joining hands across time, outside of time. You know, in another, what did he call this weekend, EDA, extra-dimensional activity. Since it's extra-dimensional activity, you can join hands
across time.
Yeah, well,
and certainly across
a historically, you know. You know, the other thing, without, we're sort of out of time, but without, just not pass it by, I just wanted to say that one of the things I get out of this last paragraph that David just read is, you'll notice that you don't see EJ every week or every month or even every year trying to stage this event again because the Simorgh descended. It's like it doesn't work that way.
Right.
So you don't try to repeat the same invocation over and over again. He'll be doing something different and invoking still with groups of people quite different conditions and quite different touchstones and
right.
symbols and significances and so on. It may be the work may be the same, but the form is always changing because it isn't, you're not going to spend 500 times trying to do that to see in case it'll happen again. The percentages are not good for that.
Susan, go ahead.
Yes, I do. Oh, you heard me?
Yeah.
Wrestling about. Okay, there's a couple comments. One is Pianjo. Breathing in tandem with others is a sure way of establishing deep rapport, more so than just matching or backtracking.
Yeah.
And then the other comment is from Godfrey. He says, in my previous experience, a tremendous power manifests through the individuals, creating a burning unlikely to manifest alone. He goes on and says, isn't the focus of this work to create a vehicle capable of manifesting that greater energy or presence? Become
who said that?
This is Godfrey.
Okay. The answer...
To become that and consistently
yes.
bring forth higher qualities.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, we're just about out of time. And I encourage, these are great comments and great work from all of us that are here this evening. I encourage you to go on the site, put some of the comments down for others so that others can stumble on it. I'll post the log and hopefully the recording as well. But also, some of your freshness, it's nice to have it up. So I think that we'll call it a night at that point. And next week we're going to go on.
Woody Allen, are we going to do that?
No.
Okay.
And next week we're going to go on to chapter 13, and that one is called what, Ivan?
That is the initiation of the absolute.
Okay. So whatever that might mean, take a few minutes, read that chapter, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7:00. Thank you for coming. Good night.
Thanks, Dave and Ivan.
Good night, all.